Hello, and welcome to This Week I Learned, your audio guide to the most surprising discoveries and fascinating studies of the week. I'm your host, Lauren Hansen. This week I learned that United Airlines used to run men-only flights. Yep, starting in 1953, United offered two shuttle routes, one between New York and Chicago, the other between Los Angeles and San Francisco. The flights operated at 5 p.m. in either direction, Monday through Friday. They were advertised as, quote, executive flights, and no children or women were allowed, except, of course, the two stewardesses hired to cater to the passengers' every need. United knew its audience, and so it packed these executive flights with an array of amenities tailor-made for the traveling businessman. The airline could, for example, make a call on behalf of a passenger back to his office. This was obviously long before the convenience of cell phones and the internet, so United's last-minute message service was a unique perk. The flights were also stocked with business magazines, and passengers could be updated on the closing market prices. But it was also about the ambiance, a boys' club, if you will. In fact, the flights were touted as a, quote, club in the sky, where such busy, important men could kick back and relax away from the office and the family. Pipes and cigars were complimentary, slippers were also available, and a communal lounge allowed men to gather for a quick card game. If that weren't enough, passengers were also treated to a steak dinner and a cocktail. You may not know, but alcohol was scarce on airlines in the 1950s, and the executive class passengers paid mightily for this new and rare treat. Cocktails for the men-only flights were $3 a pop. That's like 25 bucks by today's standards. Incredibly, this Mad Men-style flight to patriarchy cost only a few dollars more than the regular fare. And it was popular. So popular, in fact, that it lasted two decades, until 1970, when the newly formed National Organization of Women filed a lawsuit, putting a swift end to the service. This week I learned there's an evolutionary purpose for your look of disgust. You know the saying, the eyes are the window to the soul? Well, a new study from Cornell University shows that the eyes are also windows to our emotional evolution. Researchers looked at two emotions, fear and disgust, because of how these emotions contort your face and specifically your eyes. When you're afraid, your eyes become these wide saucers. When you're repulsed, your eyes taper at the sides. While both of these expressions convey helpful information outwards, they're also doing you a favor too, helping you to better gather necessary visual information. Like with fear, the widening of your eyes boosts the sensitivity to light and expands your field of vision so you can better locate the surrounding danger. And with disgust, well, the narrowing of your eyes blocks the light to sharpen your focus and better pinpoint the source of your repulsion. The origins of these expressions is in our evolution. They are the universal adaptive reactions to environmental stimuli. Our earliest ancestors, needing to survive in dangerous environments, adapted their eyes to react to the emotion of fear or disgust. And it was only much later that those expressions evolved into social signals that communicate our deepest emotions. So it's kind of like a two-part evolution. It was actually Darwin who first hit upon this theory of emotional evolution. Back in the 19th century, Darwin hypothesized that our expressions originated for sensory function rather than social communication. A century and a half later, this research is starting to unravel why certain expressions look the way they do, how that helps people perceive the world, and how others use those expressions to read our innermost intentions. This week I learned about a new species of shrimp that can kill its prey by making an ear-bustingly loud noise. Better yet, the shrimp is named after the band Pink Floyd. The Sinelpheus pink floydi quickly opens and snaps shut its large claw, and this generates a sonic energy that can reach up to 210 decibels. This is super loud. It's louder than a typical rock concert. It's also louder than a jackhammer, lawnmower, and a chainsaw, which are only half the amount of decibels. A jet engine produces 150 decibels at takeoff, and 150 decibels is usually considered enough to burst your eardrums. So yeah, it's loud. In fact, it's one of the loudest sounds in the ocean. But the fact that this little crustacean could blow your ears out with its homemade rock sounds isn't why it's named after Pink Floyd. It gets that honor because of its giant claw, which is a stunning shade of electric pink. This week I learned why a bloodthirsty pair of lions ate dozens of people more than a century ago. For 9 months in 1898, two lions, dubbed the Tsavo II, terrorized railway workers in Kenya, ultimately killing around 35 of them. Though lions have a reputation for being bloodthirsty carnivores, they aren't actually known for eating humans. So there's always been this lingering question, what gave the Tsavo II the taste for humans? Scientists finally have an answer. Their teeth made them do it. An original analysis of the lion's skulls blamed the unusual behavior on abscessed teeth, which made it hard for the lions to eat their naturally tougher prey. But a new study published in Scientific Reports goes further. You see, these lions were a particular breed common to the area. They were male lions that didn't have manes. And researchers found that the teeth of these lions were different than their fellow wild cats. They were actually more similar to those found in zoo lions, and this is important because zoo lions eat softer foods, while wild lions have to puncture the thick skin of very athletic animals like zebras. Scientists think that over time, all those tough, brutal bites may have caused an accumulation of dental injuries for the lions, forcing the predators to seek out softer prey. Enter thin-skinned humans, an easy-to-eat and satisfying snack. So it wasn't that the Tsavo II were desperate, it was more that they were inconvenienced by their typical diet. Meanwhile, the poor victims, the railway workers, weren't actually from Kenya, but rather hailed from lion-free South Asia. So they weren't familiar with the local ways of staying safe from the surrounding wildlife. Being that the prey was available and easy to catch, the lions with their soft, potentially achy teeth went for the easy kill. And that does it for this episode of This Week I Learned. Look out for new episodes every Friday on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you'd like to read more about any of the facts I've mentioned, you can go to theweek.com/podcasts, where you'll also find our 7-Minute Opinions and 7-Minute Explainers podcasts. And as a thank you for listening to this episode, we'd like to offer you 4 totally free, non-commitment issues of The Week magazine. To get those, visit theweek.com/4free. I'm Lauren Hansen, and thank you so much for listening.